Shalom, Berachot, many blessings of peace. This is Dr. Akiva Gamliel of B'nai Noach Torah Institute and Ruach HaOr Audio Visual Lending Library. Welcome. Thank you for joining with me. We're in comments 050507, and our comments are entitled Guiltless Before God and Yisrael. And our comments are offered in the loving memory of Mr. Donald Wayne Belk and Mr. Gary Lee Belk. May they rest in peace. Dear ones, we have had a number of inquiries. And these inquiries are constant inquiries. They're not just once in a great while. Over the years, we've had many inquiries. We have individuals that come to learn at B'nai Noach Torah Institute or Jewish Path or Seven Commands or one of our outreaches. And there's a great deal of confusion that exists when a person's in a position of transition, when we're transitioning from one thought and one system to another thought and to another system. During this time, there can be a great deal of confusion and a great deal of anxiety and frustration. I remember myself when I was a Messianic, and I was a Messianic pastor, and I began to confront issues in the New Testament that troubled me greatly. And I didn't have answers for them. And I would cry out to God, "Oh God, Almighty God of Israel, please show me the truth. Help me to understand the truth." Now, myself, I am Jewish, and I am of Jewish descendancy. But I wasn't raised Jewish, and I didn't really have a great deal of appreciation for observance of HaTorah as we that are in observant Judaism teach. Doesn't mean I was a rotten, evil sinner in the sense of violating many of the commands of HaTorah, but there were a number of important commands I didn't observe, I didn't follow, and I didn't give much thought to them. Now, what I would like to just take a few minutes in here at this point is to share an issue that I have found in the New Testament to be very troubling to me. When we look into Matthew, we read the story that there was a man named Joseph and there was a woman named Mary. Now, Messianics have tried to twist this around a little bit, and when I say twist it around a little bit, let me explain. They like to use a word instead of Joseph, they say Yosef. Instead of Mary, they say Miriam. They try to put a Jewish cover on a book that's not Jewish. The issue that I'm referring to is in Matthew chapter 1, and if you look at verse 18, what we're really looking at is we're looking at the identification of Mary and Joseph. Now, when we look at 18, we see Mary was espoused. In English, espoused doesn't explain the real understanding of what engagement is. You see, it's easy to just read a book just for the words that are in the book without trying to get a historical background and historical understanding. And so if we try to take the word espoused and apply it to the 21st century throughout the world, we're going to get one understanding. But if we take this text and we apply it to the historical setting of thousands of years ago, we understand Mary was Jewish. We understand Joseph was Jewish. And then the word espoused would be completely different. In Joseph's time, the act of espousal consisted of the erusin, meaning betrothal or espousal, and kiddushin, meaning separation of the bride for her husband. The erusin and kiddushin are one level of marriage that we would call engagement. But then there's the consummation of the marriage, which is nisunin. Now, nisunin is when the couple have stood under the marriage canopy, the chuppah, and that is when the man takes his wife home, and that is when they physically consummate their marriage relationships. This is when they become a couple, living together alone. So when the New Testament says espoused, it's talking about erusin and kiddushin. It's talking about a marriage agreement. It's not talking about nisunin. Now, there are three ways in which a couple becomes betrothed. Number one, the man, he is the one who acquires. The woman cannot acquire. It is the man who acquires, or he acquires through his agent using money. The man gives money in the presence of two qualified witnesses and says, "Behold, you are betrothed to me by accepting this." A lady can also be acquired with a written document. The man writes in the presence of two qualified witnesses, "Behold, you are betrothed to me by accepting this." Then he gives the written document to her or her agent in the presence of the witnesses. And then the third way is through marital relationships. Of course, the third way was not the method that was clearly expressed here, because the New Testament states in Matthew 1:25 that Joseph did not know her until she brought forth her firstborn son. So we recognize from this they did not have a physical relationship. And we recognize that even though they didn't have a physical relationship, they were married. They were married according to the observances of HaTorah. Now, if anyone were to say that Joseph and Mary were not married, they're very terribly mistaken. You see, to try and say that a Savior, that a Messiah, that God, God forbid, came from a man and woman of lesser degree, of impure status, of incorrect observances, would be a terrible fallacy. So, from the Christian position, people have to recognize that Joseph and Mary were supposed to be very, very righteous individuals. And to presume anything less than the absolute highest degree of righteousness would represent a fallacy, would represent a blemish. And, you know, if we can talk about a Kohen Gadol, and if we can talk about the very, very holy requirements that are necessary for the Kohen Gadol, if we were to apply anything less than that to Mary and Joseph, it would certainly be a blemished relationship, and the product from that relationship would definitely be blemished. So what we're talking about here is espoused, and we're talking about espoused in the historical setting, and espoused in the historical setting meant that Joseph and Mary, even though they hadn't had a physical relationship, according to the New Testament, they may have, I don't know, but according to the New Testament, they didn't. And so the point is they were married. Now, for them to break off this marriage, Mary could not simply say to Joseph, "Here is your ring back," or "Here is your piece of paper back. I want to cancel the marriage." or Joseph couldn't do that either. They actually had to go before a Bet Din, a Jewish court, and get a get. A get is a Jewish divorce. And so that tells us the degree to which the Torah recognizes that they were married. No question about it, they were married. So the New Testament also brings this out, because in Matthew 1:19 it says, "Then Joseph, her husband." It identifies Joseph as her husband. The New Testament is not arguing with this concept. And then we see in 1:20, "Mary, your wife." And so, again, the New Testament is confirming that Joseph was her husband and that Mary was his wife. Now, I've gone to this point of explanation about the historical position of marriage from a Jewish perspective, not from a Christian perspective, from a Jewish perspective. And already, we should be recognizing that there are some problems here. And these problems should be evident. We're finding that Mary is pregnant, okay? And Mary is married to Joseph. She is his wife. One should simply ask this question: why would God impregnate another man's wife? You see, the New Testament teaches that one should abstain from all appearances of evil. That's in 1 Thessalonians 5:22. But you know, this comment that's taken from 1 Thessalonians 5:22 is actually founded in the Mishnah. The Mishnah was the oral Torah given at Har Sinai that after a number of generations, the Nasi, Yehuda HaNasi, decided that the oral Torah should actually be scribed. And so he began a process of compiling all the oral Torah and putting it into writing. And one of the books of the Mishnah is called Avot. And it's called Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers. And in chapter 1 of Pirkei Avot, and in verse 8, there's a discussion between Yehuda Tabai and Shimon ben Shakta about legal counselors. And then in the discussion and in the commentary regarding what they were saying and what they were meaning, there is a little statement that just jumps right out of the page, and it says, "One must avoid any act that can be misconstrued as being sinful, even if in fact it is not a sin." And so we see the New Testament says, abstain from all appearance of evil, and we see that the oral Torah teaches that one must avoid any act that can be misconstrued as being sinful, even if it is in fact not sin. But yet we also find that the Torah teaches in Numbers chapter 32 and in verse 22, "You shall be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel." It's very important to understand where we're going here, what the concept is here. If the alleged impregnation of Mary by the Creator of the universe, God forbid, if that actually happened, then we would certainly have an appearance of evil. Because the New Testament teaches that Joseph didn't know why Mary was pregnant. She was found with child, according to the New Testament, by the Holy Ghost. Now, I know that that's not true, but it says that Joseph, her husband, was a just man, and he didn't want to publicly make an example of her. It's obvious to Joseph that Mary's pregnant. And according to the New Testament, Joseph didn't impregnate Mary. And so, in the eyes of Joseph, we have a problem here. And that problem is Mary's pregnant. He didn't do it. And to me, that is an appearance of evil. To me, that is a violation of what the Mishnah teaches. One must avoid any act that can be even misconstrued and you know, as being sinful, even if in fact it is not a sin. So we have an issue. We have an issue. You shall be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel. And so we have to understand, even though the New Testament doesn't talk about what other people around Joseph and Mary thought, there were other people around them. What did Mary's mother think? What did Mary's father think? What did Mary's brothers and sisters think? What did the people living in Mary's community think? Mary's engaged. She's espoused. She's arusin, kedushin, all right? And now she's pregnant. If Joseph could see that Mary was pregnant, come on, it only takes a little common sense to understand that other people could also notice that. And this is not something that's going to escape a community. People are going to be aware of that. They're going to understand that. They're going to see that. There's physical evidence that cannot be denied. And so, when we have a community that knows there's an engagement, it's been announced before the entire community, witnesses were there that heard Joseph take Mary to be his wife. Witnesses heard the words, "Behold, you are betrothed to me by accepting this." That is the historical setting that we're talking about. And so if we're talking about an appearance of evil here, which is what we're talking about, we have a problem. We have a problem because the New Testament tells us you should avoid every appearance of evil. And if God wrote the New Testament, and he didn't, but if he did, then that would be a violation of his own word. God wrote, God gave the words of the Mishnah, and so the words that we're saying here, one must avoid any act that can be misconstrued as being sinful, even if in fact it is not a sin. That tells us that God would not impregnate another man's wife because that would appear incorrect. That would be obvious, and that would bring the appearance of sin upon Mary. And that would bring the appearance of sin upon Joseph. And that would place them and jeopardize them in the community in which they lived. And so, when we read what the Torah says, you shall be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel. So if God requires that Joseph be guiltless, if God requires that Mary be guiltless, then God himself has to be guiltless. Now, I know that this verse that we're quoting from in Numbers is about an entirely different story. I understand that it's about when two of the sons of B'nai Yisrael, Gad and Reuben, they were required to cross the Jordan River and to go in and fight for many, many years for their brothers, B'nai Yisrael. But they did this because it was necessary for them to not be guilty before their brothers. I mean, we have a situation where B'nai Yisrael was in trouble because the spies went into the land. They came back from the land. They gave a bad report, except for Yahshua ben Nun and Caleb. And so they wandered in the Bemidbar, in the wilderness, for 40 years. And now it was time for them to go in. And so everybody else is going in, but Gad and Reuben, they're going to stay behind. And Moshe said, no, you can't do that because you're going to appear guilty. You're going to appear guilty in the eyes of your brethren. And so you must go in there and you must go to war just like everybody else. Yes, you can have this land that's on this side of the Jordan, but you must avoid the very appearance of being guilty. And the only way that you can do that is to go to war, to go in with your brethren. And so the same principle, though, can be applied to any aspect of life. HaTorah is a logical book. It's not illogical. And so the creator of the universe is not going to tell one person that they can act like they're guilty even though they're not, or that, as in this case, the New Testament is claiming God impregnated Mary and he didn't, and the evidence is withheld from Joseph. He's not even consulted. Mary is his property. That's literally how it is. Mary is his property. And so to impregnate his wife, which is his property, is a damage. It's a violation of what he owns, literally. Now, for him not to be consulted, for him not to give his approval, that is a problem. That is not only appearance of evil, that is a sin. And then we have to ask, why would the creator of the universe ever choose another man's wife? I mean, if you were to impregnate another man's wife, wouldn't that be considered adultery? Wouldn't that be considered a sin? Of course it would. And so what we see here when we talk about guiltless before God and Israel is this. We're seeing that God is the leader. Frequently in HaTorah, God says, I am holy. And God holds Israel to a higher standard. If we look in the Leviticus, we see a number of instances where it talks about, my name is holy. Don't defile my name. And when God says to the Kohanim, don't defile my name, he's giving specific things that will defile the name. If you cut a bald spot on your head, that's going to defile the name of God. If you trim the edges of your beard with a razor, that's going to defile the name of God. If you marry someone who is a harlot or a prostitute, that's going to defile the name of God. Why is that going to defile the name of God? Because, you see, even though that individual may have repented for their sin, and God willing they did, they still have this blemish in their background, and this blemish will affect the Kohen, the priest, and his responsibilities in the temple services, in the offering of sacrifices. And so the wife has to be pure. The Kohen has to be pure. The Torah teaches that the Kohen can't be blind. He can't be lame. He can't have one limb longer than the other. He can't have a nose without a bridge. Can't have a broken arm or broken leg. He can't have blemishes himself. He has to be a person with very good physical stature, and he has to have the proper physical being to be a Kohen that can offer sacrifices. And so throughout the Torah, we recognize that God holds the Kohen to a higher standard physically and spiritually. And we understand that he holds the spiritual relationship between a Kohen and his wife at a higher relationship. So she can't be a prostitute or a whore. She can't be a convert. She has to be born from a Jewish mother and a Jewish father, a righteous Jewish mother and father. And when we go to the next level, and the next level is, well, she can't be divorced. She can't be a lady who's had a physical relationship outside of Bnei Yisrael. But when we go to the next level is a Kohen Gadol. And the Kohen Gadol has to marry a Betula, a woman who's a virgin. He has to marry a young woman that's Jewish, that's born Jewish, and that's a virgin. And so we see this escalation of requirements. So when we take the requirements that God has for the Kohanim, and then the requirements that God has for the Kohen Gadol, then we look at the situation and we have to ask some questions. Certainly, one of the requirements of the Kohen Gadol, which represents the highest form of Kedusha, of holiness, is that he cannot marry a woman that's been married, even in this particular setting. And so, if the Kohen can't do that, how is it that the Creator could do that? That would be a violation of what the Creator teaches. God is holier than the Kohen Gadol. And so, God is even held to a greater standard of strictness, of regulation, than the Kohen Gadol. And so the Kohen couldn't take another man's wife, even if she were a virgin. God can't take another man's wife, even if she is a virgin. Because, you see, this has an appearance of evil. This is sin. And then on top of all of that, God teaches in Genesis chapter 1 that like is with like, and that kind is with kind. Now, I discussed that in another audio series, and we're not going to go there on this particular topic right now. But we're going to go back to just the very last concept, and that concept is this: guiltless before God and Israel. So, impregnating another man's wife, can you call that guilty or not guilty? Is that guilty before God? Is that guilty before B'nai Yisrael? You know, we have the New Testament saying, Joseph, this is what's happened. But we don't see the New Testament telling, you know, the father and mother of Joseph what happened. We don't see the New Testament telling the father and mother of Mary what happened. We don't see the New Testament telling anybody there what happened. The New Testament, the Matthew, was published some 60 to 80 years, maybe 90 years later. And so it doesn't even go into any explanation of the family. The entire family of Joseph and Mary are just like non-existent here. They're just not there, so to speak. The community is just like not there. Why is it so convenient for the New Testament to exclude the parents of Mary and the parents of Joseph and the relatives and the members of the community and the local rabbi? You know why? Because what's being told here is not in agreement with what our Torah teaches. And there's major problems with it. So, you were right to question, how could God impregnate Mary, who was married to Joseph? You were right to think of this as an appearance of evil, because it certainly is. And you were right to question, what about the community around there? How come the New Testament doesn't talk about the community that they lived in? And of course, there's much more to it than what we have discussed. A young man and a young woman in this particular setting, the historical setting, are not allowed to travel together. They must be escorted. Normally, they only see each other just on the day of the Arus and the Kiddushin, until their actual time of marriage. And so, yes, there's a lot more to this than what meets the eye. And I understand that individuals from a Christian background are not going to understand observances of our Torah. And I understand that they're not going to be able to understand or know much of what I have explained about the marriage ceremony. But they can understand these simple things. Mary was the wife of Joseph. Joseph was the husband of Mary. And for God to impregnate another person's wife would not be appropriate. That would certainly be an action. Even if it were a righteous action, and it wasn't, but if it were, it would still give the impression of evil, of an appearance of evil, of an appearance of sin that could actually result in Mary losing her life. So, yes, you are right in asking these questions, and I want to thank you for joining with me. If you have more questions, simply send them by email to questions@bnti.us. Thank you for joining with me. Shalom. Shalom.